The Guardian.
Football Weekly Extra.
Never mind the ballots, here's the Football Weekly Extra, where putting a cross in the box is a job for wide men, and the only polls that matter are the ones holding the goal up, etc, etc. Today, Premier League in your face, dodgy lasagna, as Spurs finally break the top four with historic win at Eastlands. But what awaits Harry's Hotspurs in the Champions League preliminaries? Meantime, title race final day. Man United face Stoke, while for Chelsea it's the biggest Wigan challenge since William Shatner went out in a strong breeze. Elsewhere in Football Weekly Extra, Marseille are crowned Ligue 1 champions, Inter win the Coppa Italia, and Cristiano Ronaldo keeps the Spanish title race alive. Plus, we discuss the 12-goal thriller in Scotland's race for fourth. There's posts, violence at football grounds and elsewhere, and we look forward to the final round in League 1 and the Championship playoffs. Crikey, what a busy time we're having of it on Football Weekly Extra. Super, and hello everybody. Today with us, Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hello, Sean Ingall.
Hello.
And Jonathan Wilson. Welcome back, JW.
Thank you very much.
Excellent news to see you here, floating brain in a tank on wheels that you are. Fantastic. Barry.
Yes.
Did you watch it in the end? City Spurs.
Oh, yeah, of course I was.
So did you end up caring, Barry? Did you?
No.
Oh. But what led you to watch this game?
Because I like watching football matches.
All right, okay.
Just to clear up something, you know, I don't care who wins the best movie Oscar each year, but I still watch the films that are
that's
nominated.
Different. No,
it's not different.
That's different. That's like saying, I don't care who wins between Alien and Predator, but I'm still going to watch the film. If you're interested in watching Alien v Predator, it's because you care one way or the other. No,
well, no, because I haven't seen that movie, but I have watched.
It's great.
Freddy v Jason.
Right.
And I genuinely didn't care who won, but I thoroughly enjoyed.
It's a lose-lose situation.
What
isn't it,
was
really?
An awful film.
Right. Okay.
Anyway, sorry.
Yeah.
The football.
Yeah.
Spurs totally deserved to win the game. They went for it. Harry Redknapp sent out an attacking team in a match he didn't need to win. Roberto Mancini didn't send out an attacking team in a match he needed to win. And Mancini's caution appears to have done for City.
I don't know whether Mancini was that negative, but there was a disconnect, I think, between City's defence and midfield and their forward line. You had two deep aligned defenders with De Jong and Barry. You had Tevez dropping deep. And they didn't really seem to sort of link very well. It was reminded me of a dancer that can move their arms at one time or their legs at some point, but not actually at the same time.
Michael Flatley.
And as Barry says, Spurs absolutely deserved it. You know, they played three attacking midfielders in Lennon, Modric and Bale, two strikers, and they rightly won in the end.
Matt35 says, if Crouch ever wants any nachos in the Manchester area, I will pay for them. Fantastic to see Pete getting the goal, JW. I'm sure you were excited about that. You were probably hugely excited as well by Ledley King making yet another appearance, his third consecutive match for Spurs.
Well, Ledley King's played more games this season than Rio Ferdinand,
indeed,
hasn't he? So, we are moving towards an argument that he probably should go to the World Cup.
Right.
And I think the centre-backs issue is actually quite difficult to call, because if we assume Terry and Ferdinand are still the first choice, Ferdinand clearly has injury issues. On ability, King wouldn't be the next one in line, but he's got injury issues. And I think probably Dawson then comes in, probably ahead of Upson, in terms of being the form player.
What about Sol Campbell, whose name's in the mix today?
No.
Is that mainly because Sol Campbell has put his name in the mix and told everyone how great
Sources
he is?
Sources close to Cabello seem to indicate that he's going to get included in the preliminary squad, which I have to say is a surprise to me, but, you know.
It would be a surprise to me. But
well, there you go. If it's a surprise to you.
Well, it may happen, but I think it's a very odd thing for a man to have kind of had such a long break from top five football to come back and on the basis of a couple of months of playing to suddenly be in the World Cup squad. I mean, the age he is when you've got injury problems with centre-backs, it just seems to make no sense at all.
Yeah. Well, anyway, Spurs then with a fantastic pairing of Dawson and King and a fantastic ice water bath for Harry in his post-match interview there. Terrific. There were great scenes of celebration, etc.
There were, particularly from Craig Bellamy. Did you see him high-five Harry and give him a big smile? That was quite interesting. The rumours linking him with White Hart Lane
Well, and Harry, in fact, making all sorts of accusations about how he ended up instead at City.
And the other thing I thought was quite interesting, the Eastern's PA afterwards played a Heaven Knows I'm Miserable Now by the Smiths.
Yeah, not the only topical musical choice in this week's Football Action, as we'll be coming back on to later on. Well, that's potentially not the only cold shower that Harry and his chums will be having, because they will or have the risk of facing some pretty strong teams in the Champions League preliminaries, which is all they've qualified for so far. As you've probably seen, the list includes such names as Ajax, Celtic, Werder Bremen, Porto, Mallorca, Sampdoria, Lyon, CSKA Moscow, and Olympiakos. Some of Europe's strongest teams there, and Celtic and Lyon. They were queuing up for that one. No, it's the end of the season, which French teams do okay. No, they're preliminaries.
Pardon?
Yeah, it's the what I'm saying is Lyon at the start of the season is quite a worrying prospect. Yeah,
yeah. Some Spurs fans seem to have forgotten that there is still, you know, a lot done. More to do. They haven't qualified for the Champions League. They've qualified for a playoff to get into the Champions League. But the fact that they've qualified for this playoff may enable them to, you know, lure more big names to White Hart Lane during the summer, which kind of struck me as interesting. One of the most enthusiastic celebrating players last night was David Bentley, who was running around in his pants, pouring an ice bath or a big bucket of ice water over his manager. I half expected Redknapp to turn on him and perhaps punch him in the face, because I'd say Bentley could be one of the first out the door, and this triumph for Spurs could backfire on him in spectacular fashion.
After being deluged with ice cubes, some think that Redknapp will be on the rocks in tactical terms when he gets into the Champions League, that it will be a test of his tactical noose that he might not pass. How do you feel about that, Jonathan?
It'll be a test, because it'll be a level he hasn't played at before, and in a different environment to that which he's played before. But you don't take a team to fourth in Premier League without knowing what you're doing. I mean, yeah, it's uncharted territory, but I think he's got every right to have a go at it, and I don't think there's any reason necessarily to think he'll fail.
Right.
I also think that this isn't actually the worst thing for City. That depending who they bring in the summer, and I think if they bring in a central midfielder and a centre-back, and depending, you know, obviously what other teams spend, I think there's a good chance they could end up being favourites for the Premier League next season. Because United appear to have no money to spend, so, and therefore there's no great reason why they should be any better next season. Particularly if you're going to keep playing Giggs and Scholes, who seem immortal, but presumably aren't. Chelsea are an ageing team, unless they spend dramatically. Arsenal are going to have the same issues they've always had and may not have Fabregas. So City, I think, could end up, if they don't have the distraction of the Champions League, could end up being in a very good position in terms of the Premier League.
Right, a prospect which enthuses you by the sound of it. Chen Chao.
Put off by people waving on both sides.
Yeah, both Sean and Barry want to leap in here, but Chen Chao is ahead of both of you. When he asks, brain in a jar, his words not mine, John, because it's not a jar by any means. What he would do to make City a force in the league, re-tactics and reinforcements.
Well, the first issue is the manager, whether Mancini will stay.
Should he stay?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there's always a problem. I think people act too quickly, just generally in the modern world, which makes me sound about 90. But if you look at a lot of the great managers, their first season at a club, I mean, Sir Alex Ferguson, obviously. But you know, Brian Clough, his first season at Derby, they finished 18th in Division 2. In the modern world, he'd be gone, and he wouldn't have a chance to take, I think, 4 years later in the European Cup semi-final. It took Herbert Chapman and Arsenal 5 years to win a trophy. So therefore, you have to give him at least another year, probably another 2 years, to have an opportunity to build things as he wants to build them. Because at the minute, he's still using effectively the squad Mark Hughes built.
Well, I'd say two things. Like, first of all, Mourinho won in his first season at Chelsea. Arsene Wenger, in his first season, full season at Arsenal, won the league. Second thing...
this isn't Mancini's first full season at City.
No, of course it's not. But what he hasn't got City doing is playing as a team. I think there's still a bunch of individual slash mercenaries that, you know, there are a few difficult characters there. And as Jonathan says, you might have to bring a few players in. But, you know, you don't look at them and think they're a happy bunch. Did anyone see the... Kirk Bradley, who's a Manchester City fan, at the start of the season, he was so confident Man City would get into the Champions League and win it next year, he got a tattoo on his arm that said Manchester City, Champions of Europe 2011. And the quote in the Manchester United News at the time was, "With Mark Hughes at the helm and the money flowing in, we are not only going to challenge a Big Four, but the whole of Europe as well. My mates think I'm crazy, but I don't care. We're going to be in the champions of Europe, and when that happens, we'll see who is laughing then."
Right. If it's 2014, he's still in time to kind of get a slight alteration. You know the way you do with those checks that you forget to cash in the first 6 months? Just make a little.
I don't think I've ever cash a check.
Or you could change the E to an A and then put league underneath. So have Champions of Europa League 2011.
Or if things go really pear-shaped, just change the championship.
Right, yeah. Or can but, you change?
Or you could just change the whole thing into a big skull,
right? or maybe make the city into United and do it that way, or no?
There are plenty of ways around.
Right, okay. Good news there. A little ray of light for him. On the subject of United and the title race, which of course comes to a climax this weekend, it kind of boils down, does it not, to what Wigan do at Stamford Bridge? Can they force a draw this team that defeated Chelsea 3-0 at the DW? Stadium earlier this season. JW?
I think it was 3-1, wasn't it?
But, was it 3-1?
That was the only reason I was frowning, sorry.
Oh, right.
No, I don't think they can.
Thanks. In part two, we're going to be speaking to... so it's Chelsea's title, is it?
Yeah, surely yeah. It's got to be. I mean, really, the odd thing is they haven't already wrapped up before now.
Yeah.
Well, the odds, I mean, Wigan are 30-1 to win, Stoke are 32-1 to win. It sort of tells you, really, that you know, the chances of either getting something is quite small.
Among this week's posts, some urging us to get help for you, Sean, because you are incapable of discussing a fixture without rattling off in Rayman fashion a series of odds. And also a wide-ranging debate on who should get manager of the season, top candidates being Roy Hodgson, of course, who suffered defeat to Stoke last night, but in other respects has had a fantastic run of it so far, and Carlo Ancelotti winning the title, it seems, is likely, this weekend in his first season. Somebody else posting in saying Arsene Wenger managing a top four finish with two comedy keepers and some others. I'm sorry, I was just looking for the bloke's name. Who would you give it to?
Roy Hodgson, without question.
Barry?
Phil Brown.
Sean?
Roy Hodgson for me as well.
Right, okay, good. Lovely. Now, in part two, we're going to be speaking to Sid about the still very much alive Spanish title race and more, and casting our eye around Europe too.
Football Weekly Extra with James Richardson.
Hello, Sid Lowe. Yeah.
Hello, James Richardson. How are you?
I'm very well. You're in an airport?
No, it sounds like it, doesn't it?
It does.
In a car park
underneath
the main stand at the Vicente Calderon.
Oh, and you're there to interview somebody?
Well, I hope so. I'm here in the, what's the best word for this? The bum fight, the mix zones, fighting away with other journalists trying to interview people, yes.
Is this,
it's a shambles.
It's ahead of the Europa League final in Hamburg, is it?
Very much so, yeah.
Right. Who have you got your BDI on, Sid?
Well, inevitably, the ones with an English connection, so Forlan and Reyes, although I don't know what the chances are of that. And there's a couple of others I'd quite like to have a word with as well, amongst them the centre-back Álvaro Domínguez, who I think is quite an interesting character.
Why is that?
Well, not least because, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on the pod, but during the second leg of the Liverpool game, I've forgotten who it was now, one of the Liverpool players were complaining, and he turned round with perfect English and told him to shut his effing mouth, which I thought was pretty impressive.
Very good. Now, exciting action last night in the Liga, where Real Madrid replied to Barcelona's win on Tuesday night with a storming come-from-behind victory at Mallorca.
Yeah, it's not just that they responded to Barcelona's win, it's Barcelona won 4-1, so Madrid said, all right, then we'll win 4-1 as well. They were 1-0 down, and to be honest, I thought they were getting taken apart a bit by Mallorca. Mallorca were very, very good indeed, and pretty unfortunate that it was only 1-0. And then Cristiano Ronaldo scored just before half-time, a breakaway goal out of not very much, in truth. And then in the second half, having got that, Madrid were way, way, way the better side. Although I'm tempted to say that Madrid weren't the better side, Cristiano Ronaldo was. I thought Madrid were very poor last night, but I thought Ronaldo was spectacularly good. He got a hat-trick, and after the game, he said it might well have been the best performance of his entire career.
Really?
Sid, Barcelona travelled to Sevilla on Saturday night. What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, this is the big one. This is one that everybody's been looking forward to in the capital anyway, in terms of, you know, Barcelona going to slip up, have to slip up, from Madrid's point of view, and there were two real possibilities. I suppose maybe you'd say there were three possibilities after Clasico. One was Espanyol away, which they did slip up. They got a 0-0 draw when they really needed to win it. The other was Villarreal away at the weekend, which Barcelona responded brilliantly to, and they, you know, they blew Villarreal off the park, really. And then the final one is this weekend in Seville. Bear in mind that only two teams have beaten Real Madrid this season apart from Barcelona. One's Athletic Bilbao, who Real Madrid play this weekend. The other is Sevilla, who Barcelona play this weekend. Sevilla also the side that knocked Barcelona out of the Copa del Rey. And to add to all of this, it's only going to take a draw for Real Madrid to go ahead of Barcelona at the top of the table. I think there's a very, very, very good chance now of Real Madrid winning the league. That said, of course, if Barcelona respond, that might well be it. Nobody expects either side not to win on the final day, so it does feel like it's about this Saturday.
Right, OK. And how are Athletic Bilbao away from home?
Well, away from home, they've been pretty poor. In fact, they've been reasonably poor at home in the last couple of weeks. They seem to have run out of steam a little bit. Athletic Bilbao do very, very, very much dislike Real Madrid, and I'm sure they would love to ruin Real Madrid's party for them. But very rarely get good results at the Santiago Bernabeu. I think I saw them win 2-1 once over the last 7 or 8 years, but they're also the side that were beaten 3-1 by Real Madrid to win the league. I think in Ronaldo's first season, I don't think in truth that Athletic Bilbao are going to cause Real Madrid too many problems. Right. I do, however, think that Seville will cause Barcelona them.
Smith 17 says, after your wonderful pim pam pum pariba. Thank you. Yeah. What is your favourite Spanish football term, Sid? Is it Vaselina, Sombrero, or the classically referential Cancerbero? Or have you
well,
said
Well, I really do like the Vaselina one. And for those who don't know, a Vaselina is a lob, but obviously it's a Vaseline. It means literally means Vaseline, presumably because I'm assuming there's some sort of bizarre mental image of things sliding up and down again easily. I don't know. That worries me slightly. But there was a lovely quote from one of Spain's most famous football writers talking about a Romario goal many years ago. And I can't actually remember who the goalkeeper was, but the quote was, Romario left the goalkeeper standing alone in solitude and I think it was, and covered in Vaseline.
Yeah.
So maybe that one.
Yes. Good. Excellent. Well, Sid, that's fantastic. Sounds like we better check in with you on Monday to see what's happened in this potentially decisive weekend for the Spanish title.
It's decisive for everyone as well, by the way, because it's not just a title. Bear in mind that there's all sorts of things to play for, obviously, in a football league season. There's a title, there's a Champions League position, the UEFA Cup spots, and the relegation positions. Only one of those positions has been decided with 2 weeks to go. Still, 9 teams could go down. Still, the fight is open for the final Champions League place. Still, the fight is open for the top of the table. And still, the fight is open for the European places. The only thing that's been decided is that Valencia are third and will be in the Champions League next season against Spurs.
Absolutely. If Spurs make it through. I have to say, actually, we never said this about Spurs, but all this business about them facing the preliminaries and that.
But they can still finish third.
They could still finish third in the Premier League, couldn't they?
Yeah, they could. I was thinking last night about how Ozzy's knees must be going all trembly, but the tragedy was he wasn't going to Wembley. And then someone pointed out to me that actually he could be going to Wembley, because the final's at Wembley next year, isn't it?
Wow, that's so very, very true. That's so very, very true. I see a remix on the horizon then.
Yeah, so do I.
Spurs always win the cup when there's...
with Rabbit on the B-side.
Spurs always win the cup when there's a one in the...
It's written in the stars. They're going to win the Champions League.
They're 20-1 for the Champions League.
Only?
Which is a ridiculous price.
But yeah. All right then. Sid, that's brilliant as ever. Many, many best wishes and good luck, etc. with your day's work there at the Vicente Calderon. And we'll speak to you on Monday.
Fantastic. Speak to you then.
Thanks, Sid. Exciting news just before the pod started today was that the National, top Columbus, Ohio-spawned rock band, The National, were in The Guardian, actually.
You've got some history with them, James, haven't you? You've partied with them backstage in Paris and London.
Partied like a rock star
did you introduce yourself?
I felt the need to interrupt their kind of whatever PR work they were doing in another smaller, less well-appointed studio than this one. And they were speechless, I think it's fair to say, to see me again after all these years. And one of them even remembered possibly meeting me before. So that's really sweet. Interesting. They're on tour at the moment, listeners. If you like rock music and they're in your area, you might want to check them out.
My finger isn't really on the pulse, but I'd never heard of this band before.
They're big, Barry. They're playing the Royal Albert Hall tonight.
See them in Paris, and I'd never heard of them since.
Yeah.
But Barry, you are Foo Fighters sort of classic rock type, aren't you? You like your AC/DC, you like your Def Leppard, you're a meat and potatoes rocker.
Def Leppard. I used to like Def Leppard when I was about 14.
Right.
I had pints with Joe Elliott once. Beat that, Mr. National Groupie.
There's nothing I can possibly say to that. Right.
Singer of
Def Leppard.
And they are...
Oh, Jonathan Wilson.
I know nothing about music. Nothing. No, my
mum's I'm not sure if that's relevant to Def Leppard. You own 8 CDs, producer Pete chips in with, and what are those CDs? Commentary from Cesca Moscow against...
Cesca are going to be very good this year. I think Spurs should try and avoid them in the Champions League.
Oh, OK, that's a good shout. But what are the 8 CDs?
There's some kind of classic jazz, and then there's some Morricone scores.
All right, then. Now, in other news... Marseille. French title winners after 18 years. They pick up their 9th title. Didier Deschamps, who was a player when they last won it. The manager this time. Well done, Didier. Terrific chaps. Sometimes people post in saying, who was you the nicest person? Who was the least nice person you interviewed in your football Italian days? Didier Deschamps wasn't the nicest person by any means. I think he was the only footballer in the 10 years to ask us for money. And it's really unhelpful, even though he'd asked us.
Did you give him any money?
Well, I actually didn't do the interview. Somebody else did it, and he was a bit shocked to find out. I say he was the only player. Alan Boxic also asked for money, and then Alan Boxic went to Juventus. And I'd obviously said, oh, English film crews pay money to Didier Deschamps. So that when we went to interview him, or when this bloke went to interview him, he said, yes, but you're English, you pay, no? So, because, you know, they're short of a bob, footballers. Anyway, he's a terrific manager, and there you go. And he's French champion. Scotland, Barry, tell us all about the race for fourth place in Scotland.
Well, it's a fascinating race. It's between Motherwell and Hibs at the moment. Hibs had a great chance to leapfrog Motherwell last night because they were 6-2 up against them in a league match. And
6-2, listeners.
6-2, and Motherwell managed to peg them back to 6-6, missing a penalty in the process.
Yeah, right at the death, it looked like they'd blown their chance, no, when they failed to put that... Well, the keeper saved it, didn't he?
Yeah.
But then, in the 93rd minute...
There was a wonder strike, Van Basten-esque wonder strike from someone whose name now escapes me.
Right, sadly. We were going to look that up, weren't we?
Yeah, we forgot.
Right.
But yeah, it was great. It's on our classic YouTube feature.
Is it already?
The match highlights, yes.
It only played last night.
I know, we're very much on the ball with the Guardian football website.
Good for us.
So excellent. On the ball, I nearly forgot what our website is called.
Anyway, well done to Craig Brown. Yeah. Always nice.
But
to
it's quite interesting now because...
So Hibs would go into what? The Europa League, is it?
They're fighting it out for the...
Not Hibs.
Last remaining... Europa League place, but they each have one game left, and Hibs, who are a point behind Motherwell, are away to Dundee United, who are in third,
right,
and have already secured their Europa League place, and Motherwell are away to Rangers, who, and you wouldn't really fancy their chances of winning that, because Rangers are very much in celebratory party mode and will be putting on a show for the Ibrox faithful before they're presented with the league title trophy, or the league trophy.
Excellent.
So anyway, I mean, the fact of the matter is they're basically battling it out to see who gets the privilege of being eliminated 6-0 on aggregate by some Albanian outfit in July, so it doesn't really matter.
Well, it does to Jonathan, because he'll be able to write a blog and a couple of pieces on it and pay his rent for a week or two.
If you commission me, yeah.
Smiles all around then. Jonathan, any other news from, the wide world of European football?
Shakhtar wrapped up the Ukrainian title last week, and then Benfica could have won the Portuguese League, which would have been only their second title since 1994, had they beaten Porto, which they didn't do,
right,
which means they now have to get a point at home against Rio Ave on Sunday. And even if they lose, Braga then have to win away at Nacional to pip them.
Right, okay.
So Benfica really should wrap it up on Sunday.
Barry, any Portuguese-related anecdotes you want to share with us?
No, just that I was in Lisbon for a weekend, a couple of weekends ago, and with a few mates, and we were told by a local that Benfica were going to win the Portuguese league that night, and there'd be great celebrations. But I'm quite surprised. I think we ended up getting slightly tired and emotional anyway, and were completely oblivious to whether they'd won it or not.
Right.
So I am quite surprised to hear they haven't wrapped it up yet.
Right. Okay.
So to answer your question, no, I have no interesting Portuguese-related anecdotes.
Well, there's also been action, of course, from Italy midweek with the final of the Coppa Italia. We'll get onto that possibly after this. Coppa Italia final this Wednesday night at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome, which brought together for the fifth time in 6 editions Roma and Inter. And ill-tempered affair it was. Very ill-tempered, Francesco Totti, who was brought on in the second half after Inter taking the lead with a very well-taken Diego Milito goal. Totti brought on and then got sent off for kicking Mario Balotelli, whose rehabilitation with the Inter fans seems to be well underway. But Totti, Barry, you saw this kick. What did you make of it?
I'd be proud to have that red card to my name, to be honest. It was
he
lovely.
Really took
really
a swing at it,
was nice. Yeah. Yeah, there was no attempt to get the ball whatsoever. It's just, I'm going to kick him very hard, and he did.
He did, and then he kind of bent over and told him something and then walked off with an air of job well done. Yeah.
But the fact, with the Coppa Italia, it's not a particularly prestigious competition. I think I'd rather have that red card on my CV than the medal.
Right.
It was a foul of great beauty, just totally vicious.
Right. It certainly is being regarded as putting another nail in the coffin of any thoughts of a Totti comeback for the national team. His form and indeed his use by Claudio Ranieri, the Roma manager of late, hasn't in any way added any momentum to a cause for him to return to the Italian side. And I think getting one of these little outbursts brings to mind the spitting incident with Christian Poulsen from 2004. I don't think this will convince Lippi that he is the way to go, Barry.
Was there a realistic chance he was going to get
called up? Yeah, I think there was. There have been hints of it, and he's over 30, which is very much what Lippi likes in a player. He was in it last time, which is pretty much the first thing on Lippi's checklist. Did they play for me in Germany in 2006? If no, not interested. Speaking of kicking and violence anyway, how about the extraordinary scenes at Kenilworth Road at Luton York City? The Blue Square playoff semi-final. And Sean Ingle, you saw this, did you?
Well, I was in the office. I was working, so I couldn't go to the game. But my Uncle Steve was there. He's a coach at Luton, and he takes the kids on at half-time. And he said he was nearly beaten up because he'd ended up somewhere in the York box, and some of the Luton fans thought he was a York City member until they saw his tracksuit. But yeah, it was quite scary.
How did it all develop?
Well, Luton fans claim that Richard Brody, who's a York City striker, had grabbed a ball by the throat in the first half, and they claim that York some of the players made gestures to the crowd after they'd won. But to be honest, it was because Luton lost, and no amount of taunting surely justifies pelting opposition players and also fans with missiles, including coins, brooms and mops.
Did your Uncle Steve have a brush with the law?
Oh, because they are outside the stadium. They'd raided a DIY shop and were setting about the forces of law and order with rakes and that kind of thing.
It was quite horrific.
But the footage is extraordinary. You've got basically the stands there where all the fans are at the back of the stands being herded back by the police, and all the Luton fans are on the pitch. And the York City players are cowering at the back of the stands and trying to make their way to an exit, but having to scurry back under a hail of missiles. It's amazing scenes.
Well, I've spoken to a few people that were there and looked at a few of the various forums. Apparently, before the game, the Luton DJ, he played "I Predict a Riot," "War, What Is It Good For?" and "Two Tribes Go to War." After the game, Luton chairman Nick Owen,
TV's
Nick Owen, did say it was absolutely dreadful, but he stopped short of saying that fans found guilty would be banned from watching Luton Town, which I think should happen. I mean, instead he said, "I never condemn our fans on block because our fans are absolutely magnificent, but one or two of them have let the clan club down. But I think it was more like 200 or 300.
Yeah,
to be honest.
I was at Luton's first game this season away at AFC Wimbledon, and there was an incident there when a bloke, apparently no provocation, set upon Wimbledon's Womble mascot and ripped his head off and threw it on the pitch. And the Womble was
the costume head.
Yeah, sorry. And the man inside the Womble suit was then throwing punches, and then suddenly realised his head was exposed and retracted his head very sharply like a startled turtle.
So there was a headless Womble.
There was a headless Womble fighting with a Luton fan.
Wow.
His stewards and people piled in.
Balloon. Oh, that's got to be on the classic YouTube, isn't it?
Well, I was at a Leinster Heineken Cup match, my rugby shame, earlier this season, and saw the Leinster mascot, who's like a wolfhound. He was just posing for down on the touchline or just inside the advertising hoarding, posing for pictures with an array of kids. And someone just walked up and punched him in his big wolfhound head, which I thought was rather uncalled for.
Ill-advised as well, because I bet that's some serious padding there, isn't it?
Well, you wouldn't hurt your fist, I'd imagine.
No, okay.
I think it's sad, really, isn't it?
It's very sad. And somebody posting in, actually, sorry, I lost my notes with everyone's names on, saying, is it just me or is this kind of thing becoming increasingly prevalent? Because, of course, Wednesday, their game with the Crystal Palace, marred by ugly scenes.
Certainly at the end of the season, where there's more to play for, you do see more of these incidents. And I think it's time for the FA to actually step in and say, you know, if your fans do this, you know, we will close, you'll have to play behind closed doors for X number of matches the following season. Because it's basically, it's teams, they have fans that can't take losing, and, you know, they act terribly.
Well, post-Hillsborough, there was a thing that nobody ever went on the pitch, and it was very much taboo. But that's kind of disappeared now, where people, it's almost seen as quite acceptable that you go on the pitch. And from there, is the level of behaviour creeping back to one or two problem areas of before?
No one was seriously hurt on Monday. But when you have people throwing, you know, glass bottles at crowds, and it's, you know, kids there, it could have easily been much, much more serious.
Mm. Oh, well, worrying development that. Now, Barry, things are very exciting. Meantime, in a positive way, Danny Lee won. Tell us more.
Yeah, it might not be positive depending on how Leeds get on, but basically Leeds are in the automatic promotion place at the moment, but there are four other teams who can catch them if they don't win. Millwall, Swindon, Charlton, Huddersfield. Leeds are at home to Bristol Rovers, who are ninth. Millwall take on Swindon Town, so that's third v fourth, which is obviously very interesting. So if Leeds weren't to win and that match produced a winner, Millwall or Swindon would go straight up. And Charlton and Huddersfield can still go up. Huddersfield would need a miracle. But not a huge miracle, but a miracle of sorts. They can go up.
Which of Christ's miracles would you compare it to?
I would compare it to more wine at the wedding, water into wine,
but than the resurrection
of Lazarus. Huddersfield basically can go up if Leeds, Millwall, Swindon and Charlton all fail to win, and they manage a five goal swing against Leeds.
Now, but Leeds have choked so many times at this point before. City Rule, we were talking about this the other day, City Rule posts in saying, can't believe that a bunch of football pundits who are so well informed as the team sitting in the pod studio can't identify Leeds United's problems. Basically, he says it all stems from going to play Exeter City, who are a much less costly team than the Leeds squad, and being taught a footballing lesson by them, and it's completely undermined the confidence of the Leeds players and also their confidence in Grayson, who is an average manager. What is the problem with Leeds?
We've discussed this before. Yeah, I mean,
you reckon it was he lost the dressing room?
Jermaine Beckford
thing. Oh,
the whole Beckford thing.
Right.
I mean, to be fair, your man's sort of mistaken in suggesting we're remarkably well informed for a start, but we don't see Leeds play very often. We don't know, tend to know what's happened in their game against Exeter. There's only so many games we can watch and be aware of.
That's very true.
I think Huddersfield, who are managed by Lee Clark, formerly of Newcastle, they're very much the form team at the moment. They've won four or five of their last six games.
And Charlton as well, who beat Leeds just last Monday.
Oh, did producer Pete just say that in your ear?
He did, yeah. But I remember our well-informed discussion about it in Monday's podcast.
Huddersfield probably left
Monday,
their charge.
Sunday they beat them. Sorry.
Huddersfield have probably left their charge just a little bit too late.
Right. Well, we shall see. Of course, so you've got the Championship playoffs as well, Saturday and Sunday. Happy Goss posting in about this. Blackpool in the Premier League would be nice. Leicester would complete an unlikely rise from the Ashes. But he thinks the final will be Blackpool-Leicester, because that's the teams that have the real momentum with them. What do you make?
He's dead right.
Yeah?
Blackpool, I mean, that the real romantic story would be for Blackpool to go up. They're managed by Ian Holloway, who's pretty well liked, except by Plymouth fans and Bristol City fans. And they've scored more than any of the other three teams in the playoff. They've no debt. They don't spend money they don't have. If they went up, they'd probably almost certainly go straight back down again. But I think, you know, they'd be the housewives' favourites going in.
Mm. They haven't been in the top flight since 1971. Yeah. Mm.
When they got relegated.
When they got relegated. But for Cardiff, though, if they don't get up this time, is this because they're in this perennial financial crisis. Is there another case of them selling off all the players, etc., and disappearing back down the table?
Could be. I mean, going up this year is even more lucrative than it has been in the past because of the 4 years of parachute payments. So, I think there's even more riding on it this year. Leicester, one of their great strengths this season has been Martin Waghorn, who's on loan from Sunderland. and he's one of a huge crop of Sunderland kids who are doing really well now. But you've got him, you've got Jack Colback at Ipswich. And then you know, even at Sunderland, Jordan Henderson had a great season. And David Myler was having a great season until he snapped his knee on Sunday. So, you know, four young Sunderland players. So Sunderland's Academy at last. Nobody cares about this apart from me, do they?
But no, I'm interested.
Sunderland's Academy, yeah. Doing really well. Yeah. So Roy Keane actually did something good, but it's just the fruit of it is too late.
He put that in place.
Well, he allowed it to develop, yeah. I mean, right. It was put in place just before he got there. But
excellent.
That guy, Myler, his father's a GAA coach in Ireland.
Really?
Quite a famous
one. He's really good. I mean, yeah, all the praise we've been given Tottenham, they were absolutely battered by Sunderland. They were battered by Sunderland White Hart Lane and won 2-0. They're absolutely battered by Sunderland 3 weeks ago and 3-1, but Sunderland missed two penalties and a goal wrongly ruled out.
Yeah.
And that was with Henderson and Milo in the middle of midfield, 2 19-year-olds.
There you go.
In your face, Spurs.
In your face, Spurs. But then Milo might... yet more postal war. Yeah. Excellent. Well, you know what? That, I think, is it for today's Football Weekly Extra. And we will be back with Ordinary Football Weekly on Monday, looking back on what looks like an absolutely extraordinary couple of days of football action. So do try and join us then. Many thanks to producer Pete, to Barry, to Jonathan, and Sean. Sean, I think you're going to include a little kind of, topically enough, voting slip or something, or some sort of awards categories poll type thing. We've not been put forward for any awards ourselves, so we're creating our own ones, as usual.
Well, it's our usual end of season award. We've just... If anyone has any nominations,
what are the categories? Do we know yet? Or
will you just ask me off the top of my head?
All right, well, you're going to put them up on the homepage of Football Weekly. Yes,
we'll stick something up later today, and if people could send in their nominations, that would be great.
That would be terrific. Many thanks, listeners. We're back on Monday. Have a super weekend. Speak to you then.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.